Pastor Chris Langford is not up here. That's because he's at a conference this weekend. So he and Scott Trickett are in Florida. They're learning about missions and the church, and they're having a great time over there. So I'm going to be speaking in their place, and you'll notice your worship guide as you pull that out. You've got just a blank sheet of paper right there. Well, there's nothing really there for you to follow along with, but I'll have some pictures on the screen for you. And if you want to write any notes, you still got that right there in front of you. So you can jot all your notes down right there. Like I said, Chris isn't here today, but last week we heard from him that he gave us two Jesus stories from the book of John. John chapter 4, we spoke about the woman at the well. And then John chapter 8, we spoke about the woman caught in adultery. And we got to get a picture of who Jesus is through these stories. Well, I want to pick up back up where Chris left off. We're not going to be in John today, but we're going to be in the Gospel of Luke. So if you've got your Bibles, you can open to Luke chapter 5, and we're going to start in verse 1, and we're going to go into another Jesus story that's going to teach us more about who Jesus really is and how we can respond to him. So Luke chapter 5, verse 1, I'm excited to explore this Jesus story with you. And as we look just to verse 1, just know that we are in one of the Gospels. If you are a guest with us again today, just know a gospel is just basically a book that's written about Jesus, that tells Jesus stories. So this is the third book of the New Testament, Luke 5, verse 1. So let's jump into that first verse together. Verse 1 says, "Now it happened when the crowd was pressing around him and listening to the word of God, he was standing by the lake of Gennesaret." Who is this he? This is Jesus. Jesus is the character already we're seeing here. The Lake of Gennesaret, well, that's the Sea of Galilee that you've maybe heard of before. It had a lot of different names for it. That region had a lot of different people living in it from different races, lots of different languages, so it had a lot of different names. Well, I'm going to call it the Sea of Galilee for the rest of our time this morning. The Sea of Galilee was in the northern area of Israel. You'll see a picture on the screen of Israel. And if you think of Israel kind of like California, it's a lot smaller than California is, but there's two kind of major metropolitan areas where people live. California, that would be Los Angeles and San Francisco, kind of Bay Area. Two main places where everyone's at. Well, Israel was the same in Jesus' day. There was Jerusalem down in the south, and then there was Galilee up in the top. And there was the Dead Sea in the bottom, and there was the Sea of Galilee up on the top. So these are the main two areas where people live. We're up in the north part of Israel in Galilee, and the west side of Galilee is the primarily Jewish area. So Israel is owned by Rome at this point. They are the big empire that has this Jewish colony, but it's mostly Jewish people where Jesus is working with on this west shoreline of the lake. So Lake Galilee would be a dry, hilly climate. It'd be similar if you've been to kind of inland San Diego area. It'd be somewhat Mediterranean, but very dry, some rolling hills, lots of grasses, couple trees. So that would be kind of the area that Jesus would be at. And we've got another picture of the Sea of Galilee that's a little more zoomed in here. Jesus would be, on the western side. And if you see up near the north at Capernaum, this is where a lot of his ministry took place. So here we see Jesus is next to the Lake of Gennesaret in verse 1, and he's actually along the shoreline. So we're going to look ahead here in verse 2. "And when he saw two boats lying at the edge of the lake," he saw two boats lying at the edge of the lake, "but the fishermen had gotten out of them and were washing their nets. And he got into one of the boats, which was Simon's, and asked him to put out a little way from the land. And he sat down and began teaching the people from the boat." Well, some other ideas for you here just to lay kind of the scene. Again, this is Jesus just starting off his ministry. He's just kind of kicked it off. In fact, just a chapter earlier, we see is just the very beginnings of his ministry. So he's not super well known. He doesn't have a crew of disciples that are following him, these apostles, yet. Jesus is just wandering around the countryside, but people are starting to hear who this guy is. They're like, is this the guy that, you know, did that miracle with all the wine? There was this party, and they ran out of wine and drinks for all their friends, and then Jesus made a ton of jars extra. Is that the guy who did that? Wait, is he the guy that did this miracle over here? And so as Jesus walks down the shoreline, there's this crowd that's already following him. He doesn't have a huge following yet. He hasn't made a ton of big messianic statements yet. He hasn't dealt with the Jewish authorities in Jerusalem yet. But he's getting this crowd who's like, who is this guy? Oh, let's see if he does something cool. So he's got some people following him here, but no one really knows exactly who he is yet. Jesus also, for some context, is a rabbi. He's a traveling religious teacher. And if you can kind of get an impression for what that would be like today, imagine like a Cal State University professor who's on tour doing lectures in different cities. This is kind of like what Jesus would be like. He's somewhat of a respected person. He's got some knowledge about the Jewish religion and about God, but he's traveling. He's itinerant. So he wasn't really nailed down in any one place. So his miracles are famous gossip. People are like, we got to figure out who this guy is. Jesus has got a crowd following him. But like in verse 1 says, they're pressing in on him. You know, the guys from the back are like, oh, okay, there's the Jesus guy. We got to get in towards him. And the guys in the front are getting pushed in by these first guys. And so you can imagine Jesus almost standing against the shore of the lake here. And this crowd is pushing in on him. And his ankles are getting wet. And he's like, what do I do here? He's got a good solution. He looks at these fishermen, he sees these boats, glances over his shoulder, oh yeah, and he asks this guy named Simon to get in his boat. Simon here is the name that's used for him mostly in this chapter, but we know him better as Peter, and you'll see in verse 8 he's called Simon Peter. I'm going to use the name Peter from now on because that's how we know him better, that's how Peter is known throughout most of history. Simon was his Jewish name. And Peter was a name given to him later by Jesus that is a Greek name, meaning rock. And that's a pretty cool passage there. If you want to write that down, that's Matthew 16, 17 through 18. That's a pretty cool one to check out too. So I'm going to call him Peter from now on, but he's the same guy. He's never met Jesus before. Jesus has never met Peter before. So you can imagine the scene. Peter's out there. It says the boats are on the shore. They've been fishing all night. They're cleaning their nets, they get seaweed in your net and all this other debris as you're fishing all night. And they come in, they've got to kind of rinse those out, dry them out so they don't rot. And so they're on the shoreline, scrubbing their nets, getting it all figured out. They're like, what's with the crowd coming down the shoreline? Who's that? Who's that guy there? I don't know. Scrubbing their nets. And suddenly that guy turns around, walks up to Simon and says, hey, can I use your boat? And Simon is respectful or polite, and he's like, well, okay. He puts him in the boat. Jesus pushes off from the shore, and then Jesus there has this awesome setup where the Galilean shoreline would have hills, and so Jesus has a natural amphitheater for people to sit and hear him, and they can all see him because of the level. And as his voice carries over the short distance of water from the boat to the people, it's acoustically perfect. There are people that have gone to the Galilean area now in modern day Israel. And there's places you can stand where acoustically your voice will carry a really long ways if you're in the right spot. Jesus knew this. He's pretty cool. So he's teaching the people. This is a perfect setup. Simon gets to be a part of it. He's like, I have no idea who this guy is. I guess he's a rabbi. All right, here I am in a boat with Jesus and whoever he is. But then Jesus is done. He's done teaching. And then we read in verse 4, he turns straight to Simon and has a question and an idea for him. Verse 4 says, when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into the deep water and let down your nets for a catch. Well, sounds pretty simple, right? Go fishing, Peter. You're a fisherman. How hard can that be? But then look how Peter responds. Simon answered and said, Master, we've worked hard all night and we've caught nothing. So, stop right there. His initial response has a lot of doubt in it. Okay, so look at where Peter's coming from. Peter is a full-time professional fisherman. Peter grew up fishing on the Sea of Galilee, on this lake. Peter's father fished his whole life on the Sea of Galilee. These businesses, they travel from father to son. This would be like Peter and Jonah and Sons company, and Peter would be his son, and he'd take it over, and Peter's son would probably take over the business later. Peter spent his whole life on this lake. He's probably spent his childhood on this boat, and now he's a man owning this boat with a crew, with his brother Andrew and some hired help. And he's like, okay, Jesus, you're asking me to fish. It's midday. Okay, strike one. The fish aren't going to be biting midday in the midday heat. Out in the middle of the lake. So, Jesus, I don't really get that. Second, Jesus, you're asking me to go out into the deep water. Well, if we're going to do any day fishing, anyone who's a fisherman on this lake knows that when you do daytime fishing, you do it on the shoreline. You've got little handheld nets and you throw them out on the shoreline. You don't go into the deep water in the middle of the day. Peter also thinks, okay, Jesus also, we've been fishing all night already. In fact, you just showed up when we were done cleaning up. So you can imagine Peter, they've been scrubbing their nets, getting all the weeds and stuff out of them. They've dried them out and they packed their nets away. They're done. Closed it up. They're like, oh, we've fished all night. We've caught nothing. We're disappointed. We have nothing to bring back to our families. We're exhausted. This fishing is hard work. It was cold out there. All they can think about is like, we want to go home and go to sleep. We want to go back to our families and be done with this. And then Jesus is like, hey, why don't you go fishing again? And they're like, that's like asking your mom for a dinner after all the dishes are drying next to the sink and all the dinner is in Tupperware, is cooling on the counter. Like, hey, can I get something? She's like, I just put everything away. Like, so Peter's like, Jesus, I've got some doubts here. I don't think this is a good idea. So he says that, and then he says something interesting right after, though, in verse 5, the second part. But I will do as you say and let down the nets. Well, this is interesting. Jesus asks him a simple request. Peter's got all these ideas why this is a crazy idea, why this is not going to work. Okay, I am a full-time professional fisherman that's lived my whole life on this lake, and I know exactly what to do in this profession, versus this traveling stranger who's a rabbi. What does this guy know about the Galilean fishing industry that I don't know? But he goes ahead and he gives it a shot. He tries it anyway. So let's see in verse 6 what happens when he gives it a try. Verse 6, when he had done this, they enclosed a great quantity of fish, and their nets began to break. So they signaled to their partners in the other boat for them to come and help them. And they came and they filled both of the boats so that they began to sink. Okay, so imagine this scene. Jesus is in the boat with them. Peter's like, well, I'll give it a try. Jesus guy, whoever you are, we'll give it a shot. They get out into the deep water. They throw their nets in. And then, boom, the nets are full of fish. And they're pulling them in. If there's enough fish for them to pull them up onto the boat, and that's how they do it, they just dump them onto the deck, and the boat would fill up, and they'd come back into shore. If there's enough fish to fill the boat, enough to sink it, then they have to call their other partners, James and John. We need a second boat. The second boat comes over. They fill that with fish. That starts to sink. That is a lot of fish. Let me give you an idea. So this speaker over here to your left and the speaker here to your right, a Galilean fishing boat would be about from that to that in lengthwise. So it's about as long as the Elbak stage is wide. So that's about a 25-footer, 20 to 30-foot boat that they would be in, 4 feet high, 7 feet wide. And if you remember in some other stories, Jesus and all 12 of his disciples would fit in some of these boats and travel around the Galilean lake. So these boats can hold like 15 people easily. Well, that's a lot of fish. If you can imagine a boat that's that long and that wide that can hold 15 guys, that's that much fish. That is thousands of pounds of fish. This isn't like a little paddle boat on the El Dorado pond out there. This is a big boat. This is thousands of pounds of fish. So if you can imagine, I just thought, how do I make that visible? Okay, today, think of your bedroom, and think of your bedroom full of fish all the way to the ceiling. Not a pleasant thought, right? That's a little creepy. That's how much fish would be in one of these boats. That's a ton of fish. So imagine this scene. These guys were like, okay, we'll try it out. Oh gosh, there's tons of fish in here. Okay, pull them in. And they're excited. And like, oh, here's another net full, and here's another net full. And these fish are just pouring into the boat, and they're slipping on fish. There's water everywhere. And you can just imagine they're filling up the boat, and then they think, uh-oh. Oh, the boat's sinking now. Okay, panic again. And they're like, row into shore. And they're trying to get in, and they're headed towards the shore, and the boat's kind of tipping towards the back. And they're like, get in. And you can just imagine, here's Jesus in the boat, knee deep in fish, And he's just laughing. She's like, man, this is great. You guys are getting blessed. Look at all these fish. This is great. And, you know, Jesus knows they're not going to sink probably, but he's just excited about how they are getting blessed by these fish as Peter decided to obey and his crew decided to obey. And so as Jesus stands knee-deep in fish and laughs and just enjoys the scene, we realize that Jesus is the best fisherman. It's interesting. Here he is, just a strange rabbi, and here's a full-time professional fisherman, Peter. But Jesus is the best fisherman. He knew exactly where the fish would be. And so as we think about our lives today, Jesus is the best at everything. He's the best. He's the best nurse. He's the best contractor. Jesus is the best engineer. Jesus is the best photographer, the best CEO, the best teacher, the best mechanic. Jesus grows the best flowers. Jesus installs the best granite countertop. Jesus has the best plan for business, for a full, successful business plan for your company. Jesus, he has the best pottery that you, like, you've never seen. He makes the best stuff. And Jesus, he pours the best vanilla latte you have ever tasted. You know, it sounds funny. That stuff didn't exist back in the day. But Jesus knows so well your life. He knows so well your family. He knows so well your business and the situation you're going through that he is the best at each one of those things. And I think sometimes we think, yeah, if I got a question about prayer or, you know, good and evil, of course, I'll ask Jesus. He's a spiritual guy. He knows all about that stuff. But man, if I need to figure out my first quarter budget review, what does Jesus know about that? Jesus is the best at each of your professions, at each of our situations. He knows best. And so here Peter is realizing this. So because he knows so much, don't relegate Jesus to a separate spiritual compartment in your life. He knows best in everything, and so you can trust him. Because he knows, you can trust him. So let's see how the fishermen respond. Our next verse is verse 8. But when Simon Peter saw that, he fell down at Jesus' feet saying, go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. For amazement had seized him and all his companions because of the catch of fish which they had taken. And so also were James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. We'll end there and just think about that thought. Peter is amazed. His response is to fall down at Jesus' feet. Picture them into shore. They've just got into shore. Their boats are half waterlogged, bursting with fish. There's fish falling off of the boat. It's so full of fish. And Jesus is standing there, you know, ankle deep in the shoreline water, looking at this boat full of fish, looking at Jesus and like, ugh, and just hits his knees. Wow. You did that? You've got some power. You must be an amazing guy. Think about Peter. Peter is a fisherman. He's used to working with his hands. In this culture, fishermen were pretty rough guys. Peter was ready to hack off the high priest's servant's ear when Jesus was arrested in the garden. He had a sword with him. These are rough guys. They would be like ready for a fight whenever you wanted them. These are rough dudes. And here's this guy compared with this holy rabbi. And he knows nothing about him except, whoa, you can do that? Oh, I am not worthy to be in your presence. I don't deserve to be in your presence because you're such a holy, amazing, must be a prophet. So Jesus responds to Peter's confession there. Peter is not necessarily saying that Jesus is God yet. He doesn't really know that much about Jesus, but he knows, wow, you are a powerful man of God of some kind. He actually uses the term Lord here. In most of your translations, it'll say Lord in verse 8. And that Lord is different from the master term that he uses earlier in verse 5. Master is just a polite address, like, yes, sir. Just, being respectful. But this Lord right here, that's the Greek Kyrie, which means someone of higher status, someone of huge authority versus you. It's the difference between saying, yes, sir, and the difference between saying, as you wish, sire, king, Mr. President, you are way bigger than I am, whatever you say. So Peter realizes a little bit of who he's talking to here. And then Jesus has that whole situation build up to this one point that he's been waiting for the whole time. And Jesus delivers a call to Peter. It's the second part of verse 10. After Peter's fallen on his knees and he's amazing, he's just amazed by Jesus. Jesus said to Simon, second half of verse 10, "Do not fear. From now on, you will be catching men." Okay, Peter, you used to be a fisherman. Now you're going to be catching people. This doesn't mean Peter's going to become a bounty hunter and throw people in jail. this has a little bit of a more benevolent feeling to it, that like using not rods and lines, but like Peter would use nets, he's going to be throwing out nets and gathering people into the kingdom of God, rescuing people into the kingdom of God. This is Peter's new task. And so Jesus calls him in this way. There's some parallel passages here. If you're interested in reading the story in another gospel, it's in Matthew chapter 4 and Mark chapter 1. And I'm just going to flip to Matthew 4 and read verse 19 for you. You can flip there if you want, or you can jot it down in your notes or whatnot. Same story, just a different guy recording it, so he just writes it down a little bit differently from his own perspective. In Matthew 4:19, he says that famous phrase that a lot of us who have been in Christianity for a while would recognize. Verse 19 of chapter 4 of Matthew, he says, "And he said to them, 'Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men.'" Fishers of men. You're going to go out and find people and gather them into the kingdom of God. So this is Peter's new job, his new vision. He's been cast a new vision by Jesus. And so we see in verse 11 how they end up responding to that call. Verse 11 says, "When they had brought their boats to land, when they were done bringing in the catch, when the boats were fully up on land, all the fish were ready, when they brought the boats to land, they left everything and followed him." Wow. Peter, imagine again, Peter's looking at this boat, bursting with fish, both boats, looking at Jesus, and Jesus says, "Come with me." And Peter's like, "I'm going with this guy. This guy's amazing. Look what he just did. I can't believe this. Okay, I'm going with you." And so all these fishermen become disciples of Jesus, his first disciples. Peter, who's the lead guy in this story, his brother Andrew that it mentions, who's his guy in his crew in his boat, and the two other guys in his other boat that are kind of his business partners, James and John. These are the guys who will become Jesus' disciples right in that moment. And so they're like, "Okay, Jesus, here we go." And they decide to leave everything to become Jesus' interns, the guys that will follow him around for the next 3 years, that he'll constantly be teaching, training them in how to know God, how to express who God is to others, and how to bring people into the kingdom. And so Jesus is going to train these guys. They're going to be his proteges for the next 3 years. And they're leaving a lot behind. It says they leave everything. Well, they're leaving a lot of stuff behind. Let's check it out. They would leave their boats. They'd leave their possessions, their nets, all of their stuff behind. They would leave their houses, their hometowns, the places where they grew up. There wasn't a lot of mobility in this culture. You didn't move once a year like my wife did every single year of college and when she was growing up. By the way, my wife is down there, Emily. She's amazing. You should just say hi to her at some point. I love her. She's awesome. I forgot to introduce you, honey, but I love you. They left their hometowns, their villages where they've lived forever, and gone off into weird new places that they've never been before. They left behind their friends, all the people that they knew in these hometowns they had grown up with. They left behind their jobs. This is interesting, because as a fisherman, these weren't necessarily like poor dregs of society. As a fisherman, you actually earned a little better than average in this culture of an income. So for them to leave their, for Peter to leave his whole fishing business behind, that was a big financial step of faith. It was a big step of faith for all of them. So for them to leave their livelihood behind, just think about that in today's terms. Imagine you stepping away from your business and leaving it entirely behind. What if one day a stranger named Jesus walks into your front lobby of your office and or the front desk or something, and that evening you're walking out of your office to never come back? In one day, that's radical faith. That's amazing, incredible faith. These guys are stepping forward with a lot of trust in who Jesus is. But then again, he calls them, he invites them. But remember, it's Jesus calling them. He provides for them as well. He gives them a new job. He gives them a new purpose. He gives them new vision. Well, yeah, you were fishermen there. Now you're going to be fishers of men. He gives them a new purpose. The last thing they leave is perhaps the biggest and most hardest sacrifice for them to make. They leave their families behind. Now, in that culture, this would have been really shameful to abandon your family kind of in this way. Now, if we think of today, if there's a father that's left his kids and his wife behind, or a mother that's abandoned her children, that's pretty bad in our culture too, right? We would say, oh, that's really unfortunate for those kids, or, you know, that's too bad. God can redeem that situation, but that's a real bummer. Well, it would have been way worse in that day too, because families were so much closer and connected. For all of these husbands to leave behind their wives and their sons and daughters, that would have been really shameful. And their fathers, their relatives would have been like, Peter, just what exactly are you doing? What? So this would have been a hard sacrifice for them to make. Also with the fact that they would probably miss their family themselves. Can you imagine stepping away from your family and not seeing them for 3 years? That's about as long as they followed Jesus, and probably beyond that too. 3 years of not seeing your family. Now, I know a lot of our youth are gone on a surf camp today, but as a teenager, that might be kind of exciting to not see your parents for 3 years. Some people might be pretty like, oh yeah, okay, I could do that. But really, like, not seeing your family for 3 years, that's a big sacrifice. But once again, Jesus provides. Jesus provides in that, first, there's a lot of relatives in that culture that could help take in the family and care for them. Second, they could sell all the fishing equipment because the guys left their businesses. That could provide some money to provide for the family. But what did Jesus just do? He gave them two huge boatfuls of fish. He just provided them in, if we converted the currency today, thousands of dollars of fish in one big hit. So as they say goodbye to their families and say, I'm going to follow this amazing holy guy, their families have thousands they're sitting on because of this fish catch. And Jesus says, I got that taken care of for you guys. I got that handled. Don't worry about your families. This will take care of them. So again, Jesus calls them. He invites them into something, but he provides a way for them to step forward and do that. It's awesome. He provides both sets of the equation. So again, they have to remember, who is inviting us into this? It's Jesus. He knows best, and he will provide. So as we think about today, that's our last verse there, and just thinking about what this means for us today, I want you to look to the screen. There's three questions I want you to write down on that blank sheet of paper that you've got in front of you. If you have room on that sheet of paper, I want you to write down these three questions. What is Jesus inviting me to do now? What is he calling you to? What will it cost me? What sacrifices might I need to make to answer that goal? And how will I respond? How will I respond to what he's asking me to do, whatever that is? A couple different things. Jesus could be calling you to discipleship. Maybe not necessarily to traipse around the countryside with a rabbi for 3 years, but he's calling you to be a disciple of him. Maybe that means, if you're a guest with us this morning, maybe that means getting plugged into our church. Maybe that means coming on Sundays regularly and getting to know people here. Maybe if you already do come to our church a lot, maybe that means that you can get involved in a growth group. That would be the great, perfect next step for you. If you feel like you want to get more into the community here and you want to grow deeper with God, join a growth group. That's these midweek Bible studies are places where we grow closer to God in community. And so if you want to do that, we've got a great application for you. Head on out after the service. There's going to be a table out there, and you can sign up and get all your questions answered for that. Maybe God's calling you to something different. Maybe he's calling you also to evangelism. Maybe you have a story, like Peter did, where Jesus did something amazing in your life. And maybe you need to share that with someone that you know. Who in your life might Jesus be inviting you to share that story with and say, wow, I used to be this way. Jesus came into my life. Now I'm this way. Look what he did. This is amazing. He is amazing. Who do you need to share that with? Is Jesus calling you to that? Or maybe if you're a guest with us today and maybe you're still figuring out this whole Christianity thing and kind of like, I don't know, this guy's kind of young. I don't know what he's talking about. This church is kind of weird. These people are really friendly, but I don't know much about this. Well, maybe Jesus is calling you to a relationship with him. Maybe it's that foundational. And there's going to be a time, as Scott Slade, one of our elders, leads us in communion today, there's going to be a time to respond. And today would be an awesome, perfect time for you to accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. Maybe he's inviting you to that as well. So what is Jesus inviting you to? Our second question that you wrote down there, what will it cost you? Is it going to cost you your stuff? Are you going to have to sell a lot of your stuff because you'll need to funnel that money towards missions or towards investing in a neighbor and taking them out to dinner all the time or something or into your family more? Is it going to cost you things? Is it going to cost you your friends? Are you going to lose? Is it going to cost you maybe status or respect if you start sharing about Jesus and how amazing he is in your life at your work? Maybe people are going to think you're a crazy. Maybe people are going to think you're like a Jesus freak. Is it going to cost you that? Is it going to cost you your job? Is Jesus calling you years down the road or right now to move somewhere different or do something different for him? He says, yeah, you were a fisherman before. I've got a cool job for you here where you're going to impact so many people for the kingdom. Are you going to have to leave behind a job to seek a new one? Or is it going to cost you, like the disciples, elements of your family? Are you going to have to become kind of a laughingstock in your family if you start becoming more outspoken about Jesus? Are people going to throw you out of family gatherings or not want to invite you because, oh, you're turning religious? Is it going to cost you there? I think when we think about these costs, we have a couple different responses because a lot of them can be pretty freaky. And so we respond in different ways. Sometimes the fear of the things that will cost us, it cripples us and we don't respond to Jesus with faith. It cripples us because we think, whoa, oh my gosh, I can't share the gospel in Mexico. Have you watched the news recently? Have you seen the drug war stuff going on? It is so scary down there. Forget about it. Is fear holding you back from something Jesus may be calling you to? Is giving up holding you back from something Jesus might be calling you to? And these are all theoretical. It could be specific, whatever it is for you, but you know, maybe you've been inviting your brother, man, just come to church, man. It's awesome. Jesus is so cool. You got to figure out who he is. He's done so many great things for my life. And you ask him and ask him, years and years and years go by, and you just think, man, my brother is never going to come to church. I should just give up. So are you giving up in hopelessness? Is that a response to Jesus' call to you? Or are you just apathetic? I think this is an easy one I understand this is a pretty easy one to be in. Well, I don't know. That all seems hard. Seems like it's not really that big of a deal. I guess it's just easier to not really care about it, I guess. If there's anything we learn from this passage, it's that responding in faith, in trust, is not just the right thing to do. It's the best thing to do. It's the way that God provides for us and blesses us as we obey and respond to him. These guys, as fishermen, responded and became disciples. And here they respond in faith. Now, whatever Jesus is calling you to, whatever he's inviting you to, you may still have doubts, right? Peter had tons of doubts. Remember, he had all these reasons for why he shouldn't be fishing in the middle of the day in that area, in that way. And yet, despite his doubts, he decided to respond in faith anyway. He decided, I'm going to trust you, Jesus, even though I've got all these doubts, which are good reasons why I shouldn't do this, why that's a crazy idea. You know what? I'll give it a shot anyway. And that's what Jesus calls you and I to today. In whatever he's calling you to, he says, yeah, there are doubts. Yeah, there are reasons why that might not work. But I know a lot of things that you might not know, and I'm going to provide for you as you step out in faith. Just like all the fish in the boat that Peter stood on the shore and realized, whoa, this morning I had nothing. I had fished all night. I had nothing to bring my family. And here's this Jesus guy in these two boats crammed full of fish more than I've ever seen in my life. Wow. Jesus will provide what you need. He will provide. Despite your doubts, despite our sin, despite our weaknesses, trust that he will provide. I just want to close with one more story. And that was when, in 2008, in August, I packed everything I owned into my little car, and I drove out of the Bay Area and headed all the way down I-5 to Los Angeles. I had just gotten a position here at this church part-time to help with the college ministry, and so I left behind my life in the San Francisco Bay Area. I left behind my home church that I'd grown up in, my whole life, that I loved, that there were old people that would come up to me and be like, oh, hello, I changed your diapers when you were 5. And I'd be like, who are you? Like, what? How does everyone know me? Like, you know, this home church feel that, like, I just love everyone and everyone knows me. It's so great. I had to leave that behind. I had to leave all my friends from high school, junior high, youth group friends. I had to leave all that up in NorCal, too. I had to leave behind my hometown, which I love, which is a great little place. I had to leave behind my family, too. My family that I love, that I'm close with. All my extended family that lives up in that area. I had to leave all that to come here because I felt that Jesus was inviting me here, that Jesus was inviting me to work at this church. And I didn't really even know what that looked like yet, but I felt that Jesus was calling me to it, and I needed to step out in faith and make that step. Now, I'm not going to say that was a perfect cycle of obedience for me. I was depressed when I was first here. I didn't know what to do. I felt really lonely. But eventually, I would see, and Jesus would reveal to me, how he was providing for my needs down here, and how he was providing me a new extended family in this church, how he was providing for me new friends that I would meet here in this area, how he would provide for me with food and places to live and people to help me out, so many ways that he provided. And so I realized, kind of in hindsight, that Jesus invited me to this, but he knew what was best, and he provided what I needed. And so that just leads us back again to those last three questions that we had up on the screen. As we head out of this service today, I want to just ask you to set aside time to pray this week. Set aside time this week to pray. Ask God, what is he inviting you to this month or this year? What is he calling you to? Listen to what he says. We have to be listening if we want to hear what God wants to tell us. And then respond in faith, just like this story, just like the disciples did. Go out on a limb. Give it a shot. Give it a try. Trust Jesus that he knows best, and he will provide for you. He will.